Wonderful. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. This is our second of three oral arguments for today. This is case number A19-0408, State of Minnesota versus Ronnie Billa Shaka. Is it Shaka?
It is, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Butler. Attorney for appellant will have 15 minutes for oral argument, as you know, and 15 minutes for respondent and 5 minutes for rebuttal. At the outset, thank you very much for checking in early. Our apologies for the last oral argument went quite a bit over. We had a fairly extensive discussion there, but we appreciate your patience while we were getting through that case. We will make sure that the timer on the side, please take note of that. And if for some reason we have any technical difficulties, we will make sure that we address them and accommodate both parties. I just want to make sure that I can hear both of you. Counsel for appellant, can you speak up, please?
Good morning, Your Honor. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you. Counsel for respondent?
Good morning, Your Honor. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Thank you. So why don't we go ahead with oral arguments. Counsel for appellant, please state your name for the record and the party you're representing. You may proceed.
Thank you very much. Good morning, and may it please the court and counsel. My name is Benjamin Butler. I represent the appellant, Ronnie Shaka. There are three issues before the court in this case, or four if you count the sentencing issue that the state has conceded. But the easiest way for the court to resolve this case is in the first issue. The police illegally entered the house on Bush Avenue in St. Paul without a warrant. The fruits of that illegal entry should be suppressed and the charges against Mr. Shaka dismissed. Couple of black letter legal points. First, uncontested that the police entered the house without a warrant. Second, that the state bears the burden of establishing a specific and well-delineated exception to the warrant requirements of the federal and state constitutions. That's the state's burden. Third, the state has abandoned the argument it made to the district court. To the district court, the so-called exception the state raised was, quote, officer safety. The state's brief to this court, we challenged that in our brief to this court. The state's brief to this court abandons that issue. And which makes sense because there is no, quote, officer safety exception to the warrant requirement.
Mr. Butler, I'd like to ask a little bit about the record that we have from the suppression proceedings in this case and Judge Bastian's order. Did the defense argue at the district court that the entry was a search, the first entry that you're now challenging?
The defense challenged the entry itself, and part of that is arguing that the entry is a search. On Your Honor, on July 5th, 2017, at a pretrial hearing, the defense challenged, quote, the entry into the premises. On November 22nd, 2017, the defense challenged, quote, the lawfulness of police entry into the house.
And did that challenge refer to the first entry that is now at issue in this appeal?
It did, Your Honor, and we know that because the trial prosecutor knew that she had to defend the first entry. She asked the officers who were there on the scene several questions about why and how they entered the house the first time, and she spent a considerable part of her argument at the end of the second part of the omnibus hearing. The court heard oral arguments from the lawyers, the district court did.
Okay, so let's talk about Judge Bastian's order. Is it your position that his order squarely addressed that first entry?
I can't say that the order specifically says why the first entry was lawful. I think it's fair to read the order as at least implicitly adopting the state's position that the first entry was lawful because of, quote, officer safety concerns. I also don't know that it matters much. This court reviews the legality of the officer's entry de novo. It reviews Judge Bastian's order de novo, the legal conclusions. We're not challenging any of the findings of fact in Judge Bastian's order. If we were doing that, that would be a problem, but we're not. So if you look at...
So would it be your position that we can apply the factual findings made by Judge Bastian in his order in de novo considering the legal issue before us.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is our position. And that's supported by the case law. You know, the cases like Needham say that the only thing the defense has to do is put the state on notice as to what is being challenged at the omnibus hearing. The defense here did that in great detail, including the thing that we're talking about today, which is the first entry into the house. That's all the defense has to do. After that, it's the state's burden to prove the legality of the officer's conduct. Whether the judge addresses the legal theory or not is not the defense's obligation. The defense's obligation is to notice up the issue, and the defense here did that.
Mr. Butler, in you frame this as a legal issue that we reviewed de novo, but isn't this really in part a factual inquiry in terms of credibility determinations with respect to what the officer said versus with respect to what Ms. Sherry said, because they had two very contradictory stories that they were telling as to what happened. And so isn't this really more an issue that we review for clear error as to the district court's or abuse of discretion in terms of the district court's factual findings? And we give a lot of deference to credibility determinations for that matter.
Certainly, to take the last part, you absolutely would defer to Judge Bastian's credibility determinations and his factual findings. The standard of review is laid out in our brief, and it's not disputed. Factual findings are reviewed for clear error. Conclusions of law and the ultimate question of the legality of the officer's conduct is reviewed de novo. So there is no abuse of discretion standard in this case. To the extent there was a factual dispute between the officers and Sherry Shaka's account of events, Judge Bastian seems to have credited the officer's account of events over Ms. Shaka's, and we're fine with that. We do not challenge that. Nothing in our argument is premised on Ms. Shaka's testimony that she tried to close the door in the officer's face or she told them that she didn't want them in the house. Our entire argument is premised on the officer's account of what happened. And the officer's account of what happened is that for that first entry, no one asked Ms. Shaka for consent. That is Officer DeSanto at page 50 of the 11-22-17 transcript. No one asked her for permission to enter. Officers DeSanto and Fields both testified that the officers demanded that Ms. Shaka produce her permit to carry firearms. This wasn't Ms. Shaka's idea. This was the officer's idea. And that when Ms. Shaka turned to go into her house to comply with the officer's demand to get her permit, they just followed her in there. They didn't ask for permission, and she didn't offer permission. And that is their testimony, not Ms. Shaka's. And the district court credited that. Finding of fact number 14 is police followed defendant's wife into the residence to see her permit to carry. Next finding, number 15, is that defendant's wife did not object to police coming into the residence, which, okay, she did not object to their coming into the residence. But it's well established that the failure to object is not the same as consent. It is well established that acquiescence to a claim of police authority is not the same as consent. That's from the Brooks case and the Dezo case and the George case, all of which are well familiar to this court. And that's why I would guess, that the trial prosecutor never argued that that first entry was consensual. Never argued that, because the facts don't support it. The trial prosecutor argued only that the officers were permitted to go in to follow Ms. Shaka into the house for quote unquote officer safety reasons. And that's just simply not true under the Fourth Amendment and the state constitutions.
So if I could just ask, is it your position that anytime officers respond to a citizen request for assistance, they either have to have a warrant or there has to be some exception to the warrant requirement for the officers to enter the premises of the complaining party?
Basically, yes, Your Honor, although I would phrase it slightly differently. It's true that under the Constitution requires the police officers to have a basis to go into someone's house. And so in most times when a citizen calls for police response, that basis is going to be consent. The citizen's going to stand there at the door and say, come on in, let me show you the problem. And then there's no problem. But that's not what happened here.
But we look at the totality of circumstances, and this is one where the resident actually called the police to report a theft of items taken out of their residence. So it's a little bit of a different situation that we have here, don't we?
Well, that is what happened, Your Honor. But remember, no one was inside the house. The police didn't walk up to the door, knock on the door, have Mr. Shaka open the door, and then walk in the house to investigate a theft. When the police got there, Mr. Shaka was in the front yard of the house. He talked to the officers in the front yard of the house. Ms. Shaka came out onto the porch of the house to talk to the officers. No one ever claimed that either one of them wanted the officers to go into the house. This is an argument.
But the theft was of things that were taken out of the house, and including a safe that had been opened that was located in the house. So, I mean, that at least seems to frame the situation that we have here, even if they are sitting outside waiting for the police. I mean, at some point, if there's a theft, aren't they going to have to go into the house to investigate?
Perhaps, but they can ask.
Perhaps. Well, when they need to do their job, and isn't that part of their job that they're expected to do?
I think so, but they have to ask before they go into somebody's house. Otherwise, they can say to them, look, I can come into the house or we can leave. It's up to you. If you want to pursue this theft complaint, you're probably going to have to let us into the house. If you don't, we'll just go be on our way. But what they can't do is just walk in. And also remember, they're not entering the house to investigate the theft. They're not, the reason the officers came in the house, they didn't say we had to go in the house to check on the guns that were stolen. Guns were stolen. They weren't in the house anymore. The guns that were stolen. They went in the house because they had demanded, for reasons that are unclear, that Ms. Shaka produce for them her permit to carry firearms. And they were going to go with her. They were going to escort her into the house while she did that for their own, what they thought was their own safety. Now, no one in this situation was mad at the police at this point. There was no reason to think that Ms. Shaka was going to go into the house, grab a gun, and be violent or threatening to the police, like we've been talking about, that Mr. and Ms. Shaka wanted the police to be there. And so there's no concern. This is why the state has never argued an exigent circumstance or that the officer's safety was clearly in danger here. The state, in its argument to the district court, was solely focused on whatever the officers say they need to do for officer safety is allowed. Now they're claiming that Ms. Shaka somehow impliedly, I think, I can't remember the phrase, it's something like implied nonverbal consent when she walked into the house and the officers followed her and she didn't object. And that's really what this comes down to, is the state's argument here is Ms. Shaka's failure, according to the officers and the findings of fact by the district court, which again, we're fine with, Ms. Shaka's failure to object to the officers following her into the house is somehow a consent to the officers entering the house. And that's simply contrary to black letter law.
Do we have to consider the officer's purpose in entering the house? In other words, is it a search if the officers entered the house not with the intent to seek evidence, but with the intent to respond to this reported crime? Do you know what I'm getting at?
I think so, Your Honor.
Do we look at the officer's purpose in considering the legality of that entry?
I think you probably do, at least to defeat the consent argument. So if the officers here had said, we entered the house because the Ms. Shaka told us we could, then, you know, whatever, I don't know if that's their subjective purpose or a black letter fact, that line gets a little fuzzy, but that would be one thing. When the officers say, here's why we went in, that does count, because remember what we're talking about here, the guns that the fruits of this entry are sitting on a bed in the bedroom. In order for the plain view exception to apply, which is what ultimately saves, or what ultimately is what the state used to say, well, see, the guns were in plain view. In order for the plain view exception to apply, the officers have to be lawfully in a place they can be, they are allowed to be, to see the items. And here, the officers aren't. They're not lawfully inside Ms. Shaka's house because she has not invited them inside her house, nor has Mr. Shaka.
Can consent ever be inferred from the facts and circumstances? I understand your argument, but can it ever be inferred?
I think consent, Your Honor, can be nonverbal, I guess is one way I would phrase it. So if Ms. Shaka stood at the front door and kind of waved the officers in, or if she stood at the front door and opened the door and held the door and kind of waited to see if the officers were going to come with her, maybe that's consent to enter. But other than, you need to have what the Supreme Court says, and this is cited in our reply brief, is that consent needs to be, quote, express. And even if consent can, even if that expression can be nonverbal as opposed to verbal, it has to be something. And when the officers here commanded Ms. Shaka to go get her permit, and she just walked in to follow their command, nothing about that implies or conveys consent for the officers to come with her. I see I'm out of time. Thank you very much, Your
Honors. I would just ask, Judge Reyes, may I ask just one more question?
Given yes, absolutely.
We're out of time here. Yep. So my question is this. When a person calls and reports a crime, can we infer from that their consent to have officers enter their home if it's a crime that's being reported from the home?
No, Your Honor, not as a black and white matter. Definitely not where the callers meet the officers outside the home. And talk to the officers about the crime outside the home, and do not tell the officers that they're welcome to come in the home to check out the crime. The officers can investigate a theft from the front yard, and if they need to go in the house to investigate the theft, they can tell the caller that, and then the caller can decide whether he or she wants the officers inside the house or not. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent, you will have 15 minutes.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Alexandra Meyer, and I represent Respondent State of Minnesota. Because appellant has focused solely on the search issue, I plan not to address the ineffective assistance of counsel issues unless this court has specific questions. Now, Judge Bastian's factual findings that the police followed Ms. Shaka into the residence and that two officers testified that she did not object, Those findings are not clearly erroneous, and he made a credibility determination about the officer's testimony and understood the entry to have occurred during casual conversation.
Well, Ms. Meyer, is that enough for to demonstrate consent expressly? I think that's Mr. Butler's point.
I would disagree that the consent has to be express. In his reply brief, he cites George and Desso and Brooks, and those are very distinguishable from this case and from the line of cases that we cite in our brief on pages 17 and 18. So in the George and Desso cases, they're vehicle searches, and there's a very different relationship between an officer approaching a vehicle asking, no officer is going to say, can I come sit in this vehicle with you? So there's not the same ability for nonverbal cues to have become part of the case law there. However, if you look at the line of cases that start with Carlin in the 1980s and then continue more recently as unpublished decisions, this court has found that an officer can be welcomed into a house through nonverbal actions. So for example, in McGinty, which
so,
we cited
so in
on
this
page
case,
seven,
how was the officers welcomed in by nonverbal actions? I mean, I assume she didn't like hold the door and said after you, right?
Well, we don't know the record, but I think it was Officer Fields.
We know
that Officer Fields testified that it was completely natural for the officers to follow her in. That implies that there was that during this casual conversation, there was some indication. And what we're looking for is whether the officer could objectively, reasonably believe they were invited in. And occurring during a casual conversation, when Ms. Shaka turns to enter the residence and the officer follows her in, there is communication going on there. It's just not verbal. So the officers believed they were welcomed in under the whole circumstances going on here. We also should look at the fact that Mr. Shaka and Ms. Shaka, neither one were in custody. At this point, the record reveals Mr. Shaka wasn't even in the back of the squad car. So at the point when the officer is entering the house, they're doing it in response to conversation. And not just conversation, but the officer specifically referenced casual conversation. At one point, officer, I believe DeSanto says she didn't mind that, meaning Ms. Shaka didn't mind that we were entering the house. So there's a lot of things going on there that weren't necessarily captured in the verbal record, but the officers and Judge Bastian could view those and say, yes, there was consent, so that this initial entry wasn't a problem.
So it sounds to me like what we have to do is imply that consent had been given by some nonverbal cues.
I would agree with that.
Okay. So is there enough in the record for us to say it was not clear error then? Because it seems like we're kind of having to read between the lines a little bit and make some inferences and assumptions. And are these reasonable assumptions to make when we're talking about police entering somebody's home, which is a significant issue that we jealously guard that?
So Judge Bastian is entitled to make a factual determination about consent. And that factual determination is based on the reason we rely on the district court making that determination is because he's receiving more information than we can necessarily look at in the verbal record. So he is the one making the determination whether this was objectively reasonable. And I think that even if the officers were mistaken in believing that they were welcomed in, that mistake was reasonable. So that Judge Bastian, looking at all the circumstances, he makes his findings that there isn't a problem with this initial entry. He moves on to the point at which the officers ask for written consent to search. The initial entry, because of all the circumstances, there is not a violation of the Fourth Amendment.
So I just want to make sure, then you're saying the written consent has got nothing to do with this entry. It was all verbal and inferred.
And I think that also supports that this first entry was not problematic, because the officers, at the point where they believed they needed to get written consent, they asked for it. Up until then, they didn't need this verbal confirmation because they were following cues. And also, before this written consent was signed, Mr. Shaka himself said, "Officer DeSanto, go get my cell phone. It will back up my story." And he asked Officer DeSanto to go back into the house. And this is before the written consent.
I'd like to follow up on Judge Reyes's and Judge Gaita's excellent questions. So what I'm trying to get a feel for, where would I, either in the record, I understand, I think I agree with you. It seems like the thrust of the district court's order was that this was sort of based on consent and some sort of nonverbal actions. So what I'm trying to get a feel for, what are they? Ms. Shaka claimed she was the owner of the firearms. And then what happened? Did they say, "So do you have a permit? Can I see the permit?" And did she say, "Yeah"? And then everyone just marches into the house. What should I be looking for because I, from my own view, I do think it can be inferred, but I want to know what are the facts that I can infer this all from.
So I think looking-
It happened, so I agree with you. And, you know, she didn't like, apparently there's nothing in the record that says, get the hell out, or, you know, what are you doing? Or, you know, closing the door on them. But what should I be looking for, Ms. Meyer?
So I have two answers. One is based on the record and one is based on these the line of cases that show in other circumstances what has been enough to be consent. So first, looking at the transcript, Officer Fields, who is not the one that goes into the house, so her testimony is observing what is happening at the moment of entry. She says they were in the middle of a conversation. This is page 15 of the omnibus hearing transcript. So it was natural that they would go into the house with her. Natural means something more than, it means obvious. It means it's an indication that everyone agreed what was going on.
And who is saying this? That's the officer?
This is Officer Fields, who's observing the exchange between DeSanto and Ms. Shaka.
Okay.
Similarly, on cross-examination, she's asked, once you told her you needed to see the permit, what happened? And on cross-examination, she said, she said it was inside. We then went inside with her to see it. So again, it's with, we're using words of agreement, words of community. I would then point to this line of cases that we cite. And although they're unpublished, I think they're very factually similar. And that, did we lose somebody? I don't see Judge Connolly anymore.
We lost Judge Connolly.
Should I?
Yeah, let's pause. The marshal has paused the timer. Let's make sure that we can get Judge Connolly back online. There we go. Welcome back, Judge Connolly.
Yes, I love technology. I apologize with all my heart for interrupting your oral arguments. I don't know what I did, but it was clearly all my fault. So I'm sorry.
Not a problem. It happens to the best of us, and you certainly fall into that category. So, Ms. Meyer, feel free to proceed with your arguments. And if you do need a minute or two to regroup your thoughts, that's not a problem as well.
Can I clarify, Judge Connolly, did you hear, at what point did you stop here?
I missed your whole answer, Ms. Meyer. I apologize. I missed your entire answer.
So I had been discussing what was present in the transcript. So if the court will indulge me in repeating that.
Sure.
So page in the transcript of the omnibus hearing, Officer Fields was viewing what was happening when Officer DeSanto entered the residence. And she described it as, page 15, they were in the middle of a conversation. So it was natural, was the word she used. It was natural that they would go into the house with her. She then said, when asked, did Ms. Shaka, or she was asked, did the defendant object to you going in? And she said, no, what about his wife? She did not care. So her response is she did not care that we went into the house. Now that's not the same as consent, but it adds to this, the circumstances that we're looking at as a in total. And then finally on cross-examination, Mr. Donahue asks, I believe this is still Officer Fields, did Ms. Shaka object to you going inside the house? No. And after that, Mr. Shaka then asks Officer DeSanto to go into the house and get his cell phone. So looking at all the circumstances, we can see that they build together to this atmosphere of what was going on there. The officers were responding to back and forth, the conversation. Now turning to the cases that are cited in appellant's brief, this is on, all of these are on 17 and 18 of our brief. There are significant similarities in these unpublished decisions. For example, in McGinty, a 16-year-old boy allows officers into the house. And the way he does this is he steps back and opens the door, giving a, and what the court called it, a non-quote, nonverbal invitation to enter. The court also noted that he continued to be helpful, and that supported the idea that he had given this invitation. Additionally, you're on mute, Judge Connolly.
Yes, I apologize, Ms. Meyer. I'm looking at every one of those cases. And, you know, at least on some of them, what I'm looking for is, you know, the ever popular, I opened the door and said, after you, Alphonse, or I opened the door and stepped back, or, you know, they led the officers in. I'm just wondering, Ms. Meyer, in the cases that you're citing, and I think those are all good cases, or, you know, I understand they're unpublished, but at least I sort of follow the logic there. I guess, based on the testimony you just cited, I mean, the best we can say is, well, you know, it was natural, and then they went in, she went in, or the officer went inside with her. I guess, is that really enough?
There's also Judge Bastian's, in addition to that, it may not be quite enough, but Judge Bastian's having seen the testimony himself and making a determination, he characterizes it as they followed her in. And I think following makes a difference because they're doing it together in response to something Ms. Schock is doing. I think also you have to look at the cases where, for example, the Supreme Court in Adhout, or however you pronounce that case, in that case, the Supreme Court found that there wasn't consent. And what is important there is that the officer didn't follow somebody in. The officer knew that the person they were interested in was inside, saw them inside, opened the door and went in. There was no communication, nonverbal or verbal. And that's not what happened here. There was communication occurring. We may not have a specific word that says enter or welcome, but we have actions, we have communications that are ongoing, and the officers are able to interpret this. And in turn, Judge Bastian is able to, having heard this testimony, interpret it as not a violation of the Fourth Amendment, that they followed him in.
You gotta admit it's pretty thin. I mean, it just, you know, I mean, it seems to be a little thinner than those other cases. And I mean, I think in my heart of hearts, I think you're right. That seems like what happened, but, you know, I don't know if it seems is good enough for express consent.
But I disagree that it has to be express consent.
No, I get you. I get you.
I guess finally say that in some of these cases, the continuing conduct also can support or deny whether there was consent. So the fact that after this initial consent, Mr. Schock says, hey, go back in and get my phone, I think that supports this. I think the fact that no one is in custody when this happens supports that there's consent. I think Judge Gaitis's question to Mr. Butler about how we treat calls for service when the officers arrive, I think that also matters because this officer is not on the hunt for a suspect. This officer is arriving, albeit 2 hours late, to find out what the citizens want of them. So I think when you look at I agree, Judge Connolly, that some of these circumstances could be very narrow, but when you put them all together, I believe it's enough. And I see that my time is up. I would just ask that you affirm the decision below.
Thank you very much, Ms. Meyer. Mr. Butler, you will have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think counsel, Ms. Meyer and I are just gonna have to disagree about what the Minnesota Supreme Court says about the expressness of the consent. In George, the Supreme Court says, quote, courts can and should demand sufficient proof in an individual case that the consent to search was truly express, clear, and voluntary. Now, you can define that word express in a couple different ways. Like I said, I think you can probably have express consent expressed non-verbally, but it does have to be something. And here, I think, as Judge Connolly and counsel were discussing, we don't have anything. We have the officers taking it upon themselves to enter the house. And I think this is why the state at trial does not argue that that first entry was consented to. And Judge Bastian does not find that that first entry was consented to. That is not the argument that was made below. He finds that the second entry was consented to, the one with the written document. And that was also hotly contested, and we're not challenging that. That's a discretionary decision, but not the first one. In response to Judge Connolly's question, counsel talked about how this was a casual conversation. I think she mentioned community. That's not, I realize one of the officers called it casual. That's not what's going on here. The officers have just demanded to see Ms. Shaka's permit to possess firearms. She is complying with their request when she goes into the house. So this is not a situation, as Judge Reyes was talking about earlier, where—
When you say they demanded, what did they say? I mean, did they say, you know, my words, go get the damn permit right now? Yeah. I mean, what did they say? They said that.
I don't think they said that, Judge. I don't remember if they used the word asked. One of them uses the word need. I think, I don't have the transcript in front of me, but I believe one of the officers says we told her we needed to see her permit. So she went in to get it. Either way, I'm sorry, go ahead, Judge.
So I take it, and I know this is a softball, I'm thinking, you would not want us to remand for further findings on this issue of consent.
No, Your Honor, because the state didn't argue consent to the district court, mm-hmm. and they shouldn't get a second bite at the apple now. If they had argued consent to the district court and the district court whiffed on its order, that might be a fair resolution. But where the state comes up with sometimes the state can come up with a new theory on appeal. As the respondent, I get that there's law saying that they can do that, but they have to go by the facts found by the district court and in some ways the arguments they made to the district court. And so it would be fundamentally unfair to give them a second chance to meet a burden that they chose not to try to meet the first time.
And how do we know, in looking at the district court's order, I didn't really see a reference to either entry. I just saw kind of consent. What should I look to know that he was talking about this, the second entry and the written consent? Should be looking at, Mr. Butler?
Yes, Your Honor. And you can look to the record as a whole. I think counsel acknowledged earlier in response, I think it was to your question, Judge Connolly, written consent to search form only relates to the second entry and search of the bedroom. It does not relate to the first entry.
I have a related concern, and I'm sorry to interrupt you. I do want to hear the rest of what you were going to say, but I guess my question is, did Judge Bastian, was he on notice of what exactly he was considering in the case?
Absolutely he was, Your Honor. The defense challenged the first entry, the entry into the house. They did it twice. The state, if you look to the prosecutor's closing argument at the end of the second omnibus hearing, the December 20th, 2018 omnibus hearing, the prosecutor makes a lengthy argument justifying the first entry. And her lengthy argument justifying the first entry is officer safety, officer safety, officer safety, officer safety. She then pivots to try to justify the second entry and search. And that justification is consent, 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 which is all, that's fine, because that's how the facts came in at the omnibus hearing. The first entry was not consensual. The first entry was the police's decision, not Mr. Shaka's decision or Ms. Shaka's decision. The second entry was allegedly consensual.
Is it your position that the state waived the consent argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
What if, Mr. Butler, I looked at finding 14 and 15. Police followed defendant's wife into the residence to see her permit to carry. Officer DeSanto and Officer Fields testified defendant's wife did not object to police coming into the residence. Is that enough to suggest he thought there was consent for the first entry?
No, Your Honor. That is an accurate description of what the officer's testimony was. The officer's testimony also was that the reason they did that was not because Ms. Shaka had consented, but because they had decided they were not going to let her go in the house by herself to run this errand that they had asked her to do.
Mr. Butler, I just want to make sure I'm clear. In response to a question by Judge Gaitas, it sounds like you were arguing that the state, your argument is that the state waived.
I should back up. The state clearly did not argue that the first to the district court that the first entry was consented. It was consented to. If this court wants to consider that argument now that they're making for the first time on appeal, I guess you can either do that or not do that. I would suggest if you choose not to do that, that's fine because they didn't make it below. But if you choose to consider it, they're stuck with the factual findings and the testimony, and they can't rely on something the district court didn't say. The district court didn't say that first entry was consensual because they didn't ask the district court to say that. And to ping back to Judge Connolly's question, it's not fair to give them a second chance to go ask the district court to say that now. They should stand or fall on officer safety or on, if you want to look at consent, what did Ms. Shaka do to consent to this entry? Nothing. She did nothing to consent to the entry. All she did was not object, and lack of objection is not enough.
What about the Carlin v. Commissioner of Public Safety case? That is a published one upholding a finding of consent when the mother of the appellant went up the stairs and knew that the officers were following her and did not object to them doing that.
I guess I don't remember the facts of that case explicitly, Your Honor. I would say probably in that case, the government argued to the district court that that was a consensual entry. And the district court made a factual finding that that was a consensual entry. That didn't happen here. In addition, the officers here sent Ms. Shaka into the house to get her firearm permit. This was not some sort of casual investigation. Everybody come in, sit down and have tea and we'll figure out what happened to these firearms. This is the officers are very clear about this. They took it upon themselves to go in the house. They didn't care one way or the other whether Ms. Shaka wanted them there or not. This was their decision because they thought they were protecting their safety. And that is not a Fourth Amendment exception. And therefore, the entry was unlawful.
Thank you, Mr. Butler. Ms. Meyer, appreciate the arguments and the briefing. Very well done, as always. We'll be issuing an opinion within the statutory time frame.